Okay, brothers, today is Friday, August 19th, and we're on study 3 of this topic of return from Babylon, which we're working through. It's the study of Ezra and Nehemiah. And I think now that we've spent 2 studies going through background and historical material, we're going to just kind of start going through the scripture now. My aspiration is to get through 2 chapters per study. So that would, you know, get us to about 2-3 months to get through the study. It's not too much material here. But what I'd like to do is, I know we've read the first few verses, but I'd like to do it one more time. And could someone get us started in Ezra chapter 1 by reading verses 1 through 4.
Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he sent a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and also put it in writing, saying, Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord, the God of heaven, has given me the kingdoms of the earth, and he has appointed me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever there is among you of all his people, may his God be with him. Let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem. And every survivor at whatever place he may live, let the men of that place support him with silver and gold, with goods and cattle, together with a freewill offering for the house of God, which is in Jerusalem.
Thanks, Joe. So, again, we're right here. We know exactly, the Bible's telling us exactly what date these verses pertain to. 538 BC, when Cyrus the Great, he's known as, becomes the emperor of the Persian Empire. And the year before, in 539 BC, the Persians, boom, they take over the Babylonian Empire. The Babylonian Empire falls. Remember 721 BC, we talked about the northern kingdom of Israel goes away in history. They're taken over by the Assyrian Empire. About 100 years later, the Babylonian Empire takes over the Assyrian Empire and begins a process of instituting 70 years of captivity, as prophesied, we see here in chapter 1, verse 1, from the mouth of Jeremiah. Daniel is one of the first victims of this captivity, taken out of the land of Israel. And another big phase of this captivity by Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon, happens in 597. And finally, Nebuchadnezzar comes into Jerusalem in 586, destroys the city, destroys the temple. And that's the last phase of the captivity of the southern kingdom. And the southern kingdom goes away. So between 586 and 538, Israel is a community, the southern kingdom mostly, is a community basically in Baghdad, outside of Baghdad on the Tigris River. Studying the law, figuring out what happened. And again, a lot of the folks on the scene at this time are Ezekiel, Daniel. In fact, Isaiah is the first major prophet Yahweh calls. 740, even before the northern kingdom falls, to warn north and south, man, you guys are in so much trouble if you don't turn things around. They ignore him. 721, and the northern kingdom falls. After Isaiah dies, Jeremiah is raised up about 50 years later in 627 BC to tell, to 585, to tell the folks in the southern kingdom, man, you see what happened in the northern kingdom? You guys better shape up, or you're going to end up in the same toilet. And they give the middle finger to Jeremiah. And in 586, the southern kingdom falls. And you have Israel in Babylon. And now you have here in 538 BC, finally, after no more nation, the nation being gone, the temple being destroyed, Cyrus coming on the scene and telling the people of Israel, captive in Babylon, guess what, guys? You can go home. So we mentioned last week that was a big deal. In world history, it's a big deal. In secular history, it's a big deal. Could someone read verses in chapter 1, verses 5 through 11?
Chapter 1?
Yeah, chapter 1.
Then the heads of fathers, households of Judah, and Benjamin, and the priests, and the Levites arose, even everyone whose spirit God has stirred to go up and rebuild the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem. All those about them encouraged them with articles of silver, with gold, with goods, with cattle, with valuables, aside from all that was given as a free will offering. Also, King Cyrus brought out the articles of the house of the Lord, which Nebuchadnezzar had carried away from Jerusalem and put in the house of his gods. And Cyrus, king of Persia, had been brought out by the hand of Meredith, the treasurer, and he counted them out to Sheshbar, the prince of Judah. Now this was their number: 30 gold dishes, 1,000 silver dishes, 29 duplicates, 30 gold bowls, 410 silver bowls of a second kind, and 1,000 of other articles. All the articles of gold and silver numbered 5,400. Sheshbar brought them up with the exiles who went up from Babylon to Jerusalem.
Perfect. Thanks, Lou. Now, I don't know if you remember, but I think it was in our first study, when we were going over the historical background about the first temple, Nebuchadnezzar destroying the first temple in 586, and now Cyrus basically announcing 50 years later in 538, hey, go back to Jerusalem and build the temple. I think Tim said, wow, wait a second. You know, my recollection of the Bible is that the first temple was full of majesty and wealth and opulence. And how do a bunch of poor people that were former slaves coming out of immigrant territory back to a land that's been destroyed do the same thing? And that was a great question. We find out the answer here as to how it's done to some degree. How do they build a temple that's pretty opulent, rebuild? I mean, where do they get the stuff from?
Cyrus gives it back from when Nebuchadnezzar took it.
Again, this is great. I mean, this is just so insane. If it weren't providential, there's no other explanation for it. Here you basically, let's go through it verse by verse. But to start off, let's take a look at verse 5. And in looking at verse 5, let me ask you this question. So verses 1 through 4, Cyrus goes, hey, y'all can go back. So question 5, let me ask this. Who returned? Who returned? Who decided to take Cyrus up on his offer?
Everyone.
Let's take a look at this. The heads of the fathers' households of Judah and Benjamin. Now that's important because that just tells us that, you know what, when in 586 when the temple was destroyed, that was a number of years after 721. 721, the northern kingdom had long been destroyed. And the northern kingdom consisted of 10 tribes of the nation of Israel. The southern kingdom was basically two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, and with the capital city of Jerusalem and the temple. So really, verse 5 is reinforcing the fact that the captivity from that started in 605 and ended with the destruction of the temple in 586. Those folks taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar were largely taken captive from the southern kingdom and consisted of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. Why? Because the Assyrians had already done a number years before with the 10 other tribes in the northern kingdom. Assyria had deported a bunch of tribes, members of the 10 tribes, not all of them, but a bunch of them, into Turkey, into Greece. Now, Nebuchadnezzar had taken Judah and Benjamin, the southern kingdom, into Babylon, and now we're finding out Cyrus is saying you can go, and so the folks in Babylon, largely Judah and Benjamin, are going to return. Who else besides Judah and Benjamin?
Priests and Levites.
Yeah, priests and Levites. Now remember, we talked about the 12 tribes of Israel, but the Levites never get a land allotment. Levites get cities all over the north and the south. And so Levites went into captivity with the Assyrians and the conquest of the Northern Empire in 721. Levites also go into captivity with the conquest of the Southern Kingdom because they're living in all these areas. And of course, they're doing temple worship. There's a lot of them in the temple. So the Levitical priesthood ends up in Babylon too. And so you got members of the tribe of Judah, members of the tribe of Benjamin, priests and Levites. By the way, Levites priests are a subset among the tribe of Levi. You can only be, according to Torah, according to the law of God, you can only be a priest if you're a member of the tribe of Levi, but not all Levites are priests. So it's just saying, basically, Levites and priests. And as Chris mentioned, it's those whose spirit Yahweh had stirred to go up, meaning topographically go from the low plains of Babylon west up to Mount Zion to rebuild the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem. Okay? So you get people responding in verse 5. Verse 6, all those about them. Now, when it says all those about them, this is likely folks within the Jewish community in Babylon who decided not to go. For some reason or another, they are going to stay put. And I think we talked about this before, probably less than 20%, maybe less than 10% of the Jewish population decides to leave Babylon to return to the land. Wow. So most of the folks are staying back, living their lives. And so when verse 6 says, all of those about them, it's likely this, the community that's going to remain, encouraged them with articles of silver, with gold, with goods, with cattle, with valuables, aside from all that was given as a free will offering. So basically, they take up a collection among the community. These guys are doing a great thing. Let's give them a bunch of stuff.
Wow.
And that's the first basket or bucket of resources that they're invested with in order to undertake this return to Jerusalem. Chris, but, go ahead, look.
Is Assyria, where is that today?
So this empire of Assyria, of course, went away, but the people, the human beings, are their descendants are likely largely in Turkey.
In Turkey. Okay.
Yeah. So you have here in verse 7, so you've got the community giving them an offering, taking a collection from verse 6. But then in verse 7, you have also, on top of that, King Cyrus, who just did this unbelievable thing in saying you guys can go back, he also, what? Brought out the articles of the house of the Lord. And whenever you hear house of the Lord, that's the temple. By the way, again, there's just so much confusion about Old Testament and stuff. And it's just how it is. I spent sometimes I exaggerate the amount of time because it seems like a lot of times I was so blessed there, but I spent probably about 6 years in an all-black church in Akron called the House of the Lord. And just Pastor Joey decided that he liked the name, the House of the Lord. But it was a church building. It wasn't the House of the Lord. The House of the Lord doesn't exist. But, you know, hey, that's how they preach. Come on up to the House of the Lord. We're going to get healings. And we're going to... So, you know, he named that church the House of the Lord. But, biblically speaking, it was not... It is still not the House of the Lord, except a legal name under U.S. law. But the House of the Lord in the Bible is the temple. Destroyed in 586, these guys are now coming to rebuild the House of the Lord. And you've got here... an explanation. King Cyrus brought these articles out, and they're the same articles that Nebuchadnezzar had carried away from Jerusalem and put in the house of his gods. So, 586, Jerusalem level, temple level, but these guys are smart guys, Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. Get the gold. Get the valuable stuff. So, that stuff gets patriated into Babylon. And presumably Nebuchadnezzar, just like there's a temple in Jerusalem, has some kind of temple to Marduk in Baghdad and stuffed all this treasure in there. In fact, we know that because chapter 5 of Daniel describes how there was a big party in the palace where the final king of Babylon says, bring out the stuff from the Jewish temple. We're going to party tonight. And that is actually when the Persians take over Babylon. So Cyrus says, hey, this is your stuff. And he gives it to them. Now, and this is insane, because it's not like he's giving them, you know, used albums, used Beatles albums, and old underwear. He's given them nice stuff, but let's, before we get there, verse 8, and Cyrus, king of Persia, had them brought out by the hand of Mithra, the treasurer, so it's probably a local treasurer in Persia, who has to account for the national wealth, has to inventory this stuff. And then it says, and he counted them out to, now check this out, Sheshbazar, prince of Judah. Sheshbazar, prince of Judah. Let's talk about who this guy is, Sheshbazar. Well, he's described here in the Bible as the prince of Judah. So that means that he's likely a descendant of who?
David.
David, King David. That's exactly right. And it's logical that Cyrus would say, let's find the leader of these folks and give the stuff to him. Now, in our two prior studies, we've been talking about this guy named Zerubbabel. And here, and Zerubbabel is the guy we're going to spend a lot of time talking about, because
okay, what's that
word? Oh, sorry, rebuilding.
Okay.
Sorry. Temple destroyed in 586, temple rebuilding in 535, or the foundation gets laid. We're going to read. So we're going to read a lot about Zerubbabel, and Zerubbabel is a descendant of David as well, and a leader who's looked at, that we're going to see leads this first phase of return out of Babylon back to the land. So I've spent a lot of time talking about Zerubbabel. Now all of a sudden we got this crazy name, Sheshbazar. Who is it? Well, here's the answer. No one really knows for sure. It's kind of an anomaly as to who is this guy? And so the long-held view by a lot of scholars has been that this person, Sheshbazar, prince of Judah, is just another name for the same guy, Zerubbabel.
Oh.
That has been the long-held view. However, the more current view among scholars is that it's likely they are not the same person. What? Well, the thinking behind why they are not the same person is because Zerubbabel is already a Babylonian name. It's not a Hebrew name. It means seed of Babylon. So it was a name given to him by his capturers. And so this name, Sheshbazar, is also a Babylonian name. It means either Shamash protects the sun, Shamash being the sun god in Babylon, or Persia, I'm sorry, or Sin protects the father, the moon god, Sin being the moon god. So it's unlikely that this guy would have two Babylonian names. So the way that commentators and scholars, and Sheshbazar, this name's only mentioned about two other times besides here. And so the consensus now seems to be that this guy was probably the leader, the political leader, right as Cyrus made this proclamation. He probably was acting on behalf of the community to receive these articles, but then probably died very shortly after 538, and was succeeded, likely, by the time they got everything organized, took the collection, inventory stuff, left town. It was probably Zerubbabel that succeeded Sheshbazar, and so Zerubbabel is going to be the guy that we're going to see goes to Jerusalem. So, not to throw you for a loop, we've been talking a lot about Zerubbabel. Who is Sheshbazar? Again, no one knows for sure, but it's likely that he probably was right before Zerubbabel, but had out of the picture, died before they were able to actually leave on this first phase of return. Take a look at verse 9 now. This was their number of the stuff that the treasurer is handing out to these guys getting ready to go back. 30 gold dishes, 1,000 silver dishes, 29 duplicates, 30 gold bowls, 410 silver bowls of a second kind and 1,000 other articles. Verse 11, all the articles of gold and silver numbered 5,400 bucks. I mean, we're talking about probably billions, if not possibly trillions, in our national economy of wealth.
That's a pretty good startup seed money right there.
That's exactly right. I mean, a huge amount of wealth just given away to a bunch of former cap slaves. It's a big deal. And so Sheshbazzar brought them all up with the exiles who went up from Babylon to Jerusalem. Again, he probably gathered the stuff up, got the organization ready for these exiles who were getting ready to leave Babylon to go to Jerusalem. Could someone read verses? Oh, that's we're done with chapter 1, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So now let's see if we can knock out chapter 2. Could someone read? Verses 1 through 61?
Lose it. I'm not going to
read it. Here, I'll go ahead and do this, okay? So let's do this. Just follow on.
I saw Jeff Nagel right
there. How much went to the bathroom?
Yeah. Okay, let's buckle down and do this. Verse 1. Now. Okay, now that the dough has been removed from the temple, given to the community, they've taken a collection, they're getting ready to return. Now, these are the people of the province who came up out of the captivity of the exiles, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away into Babylon and returned to Jerusalem and Judah. Check this out, each to his city. So now we're going to get a census. Here are the folks that got together, went back, and not just to Jerusalem, but to their own cities where they were from, where they were originally taken out of. And here you go, verse 2. These came with Zerubbabel. So now you have the guy we're going to be talking about mostly, and likely the successor to Sheshbazzar and Zerubbabel, is going to be this political leader. These came with Zerubbabel, Yeshua, Nehemiah, Sariah, Reliah, Mordecai, Bilshan, Mispar, Bigvai, Rehum, Benah. Okay, so these are the main leadership group. Just to keep you posted here so you don't get too confused here. Again, Zerubbabel is going to be the Davidic descendant who's going to lead them back now. Yeshua is the high priest who's going to start the temple worship. Nehemiah is not the Nehemiah that we're going to learn about who is the subject. This is another Nehemiah. The Nehemiah we're going to get into is not even born yet. And then there's another name that may be familiar to you, Mordecai. Yeah, Mordecai. This is not Esther's cousin. Okay, so Esther's not on the scene yet. Okay, so now, the number of the men of the people of Israel, verse 3, sons of Parosh, 2,172. The sons of Shephatiah, 372. Sons of Arah, 775. Sons of Pahath Moab, sons of Yeshua and Joab, 2,812. Sons of Elam, 1,254. Sons of Zattu, 945. Sons of Zakkai, 760. Sons of Bani, 642. Sons of Babai, 623. Sons of Azgad, 1,222. Sons of Adonokam, I'm not sure I would want to be these guys then, 666. Verse 14, the sons of Bigvai, 2,056. Sons of Adin, 454. Sons of Adar of Hezekiah, 98. Sons of Bazai, 323. Sons of Jorah, 112. Sons of Hashum, 223. Sons of Gabar, 95. Check this out, verse 21. The men of Bethlehem, 123. Men of Netophah, 56. Men of Anathoth, 128. Sons of Asmaveth, 42. Sons of Kirath Arim, Shapira, and Beroth, 743. Sons of Ramah and Geba, some of you who were in our study of Judges a few years ago may remember those names. 621, the sons of Michmash, 122. The men of Bethel and Ai, 223. Sons of Nebo, 52. Sons of Magbish, 156. Verse 31. The sons of the other Elam, not the other Elam we looked at earlier, 1,254. Sons of Harim, 320. Sons of Lod, Hadid, and Ono, 725. Check out this one, verse 34. Men of Jericho, 345. Verse 35. Sons of Sanah, 3,630. So these are the guys that are from descendants of Judah, Benjamin, returning to where they lived, Jerusalem, or the other parts in Judah and Benjamin, going back to where they came from. Now check out.
You said it's about 10%.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. Check out verse 36. Now we, here you go. Who are we talking about now in verse 36? Yeah, okay. So you got priests here. You got sons of Jedidiah, the house of Yeshua, 973. Sons of Immer, 1,052. Sons of Peshur, 1,247. Sons of Harim, 1,017. Verse 40, Levite, son of Yeshua and Kadmiel, the sons of Hodaviah, 74. Takes care of those guys. Check out verse 41. Who are we talking about now?
Singer.
Yeah, who are the singers? These are guys that do temple. Yeah, they do their worship in the temple. They do. They conduct.
They wrote some of the psalms.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But are they priests?
They probably are. Yeah, they're probably Levites. Sons of Asaph, 128. Sons of the gatekeeper. Sons of Shalom. Sons of Ader. The sons of Talmon. The sons of Akub. The sons of Hatita. The sons of Shabbai. In all, 139. Now, check out verse 43. These are Levites as well. Temple servants. These are folks in the temple that are unlocking locks, you know, moving altars, getting the animals ready. These are folks that are just doing the work for everything that needs to get done in order. If you're going to keep the law, it's a lot of work you got to do. And so you got to have a lot of people there to do it. Verse 44, the sons of Keros, the sons of Sheha, the sons of Padon, the sons of Lebanah, the sons of Hagabah, the sons of Akub. Verse 46, sons of Hagab. Sons of Shalmai, sons of Hanan. I know it seems like work, but there's always a blessing in reading the Bible, especially out loud and publicly.
Yes.
Verse 47, the sons of Gedel, the sons of Gahar, the sons of Riah. Verse 48, the sons of Rezin, the sons of Nekoda, the sons of Gazam. Verse 49, the sons of Uzzah, the sons of Paseah, the sons of Besai. Verse 50, the sons of Asna, the sons of Menum, the sons of Neshim, the sons of Bakbuk, the sons of Hakufa, the sons of Harhur. 52, the sons of Basluth, the sons of Mahida, the sons of Harshah. 53, the sons of Barkos, the sons of Sisera, the sons of Tima. Verse 54, the sons of Naziah, the sons of Hatifa. Now check this out, verse 55. The sons of Solomon's servants. Now, these are folks that may be Levites, or probably descendants of Judah or Benjamin, or these may be even people who are descendants of the other 10 tribes that didn't get taken captive by the Assyrians, but migrated down. And they actually had some kind of lineage in working in the royal palace, beginning with Solomon. Who are these folks? Verse 55, sons of Sotai. Now, again, we're talking about... We're talking about the sons of Solomon's servants. We're talking about people that can identify their genealogies, not just we're talking about here. We're talking back 500 years. They're able to determine their genealogy. This is why, you know, we see these genealogies in the Bible. They are so important. You know, it's not genealogies. They're getting more important to us now, but they don't seem to be that important to us sometimes. But they're so important to the Bible because God made a covenant with human beings and their physical descendants. And it's important that we know who the covenant comes through. Biology is very important in the Bible. And so these guys know their genealogies 500 years later. Verse 57, the sons of Shephtiah, the sons of Hatil, the sons of Pekareth, Hazabim, the sons of Ami. Verse 58, all the temple servants and the sons of Solomon's servants were 392. So
You got really good. Talk about history. I mean, historians would kill to discover information this ancient that's this precise. Yeah. And here you have it in our Bible. Someone mind reading verses. There's going to be some names here, weird names, so feel free to just use the first letter of those names if you want to volunteer. There's no shame in messing up names here. But actually, you know what? There's enough crazy names here that I'll go ahead and do this. Check out verse. I'm going to read 59 through 63 now. Verse 59. Now, these are those who came up from Tel Melah, Tel Harsha, Cherub, Adon, and Emer. But they were not able to give evidence of their fathers' households and their descendants, whether they were even from Israel. So now there's a contingent of folks that have been hanging out in the Babylonian community of Jews, being known as Jews, worshiping as Jews, getting married, having kids, but they can't prove they may be descendants of David's. They just can't prove their genealogies.
Are they looked down upon compared?
Well, let's take a look. I don't think so, but let's take a look, because right, we're dealing with the law of God, and you know, it's not like, okay, if you do this, you do something, like, you just got to do it. So they're very careful about, we got to keep the law of God, so let's be careful about this. So you got a bunch of people that say, I want to go back, but they can't prove where their descendants of. So check out verse 60. Here they are, more of them. The sons of Deliah, the sons of Tobiah, the sons of Nekoda. 652. These are folks that can't prove their heritage. Now check out verse 61. Of the sons of the priests, these are guys that have been recognized as priests. They've been telling everyone they're priests. They're probably viewed as priests in Babylon. There's no temple to serve in Babylon. But they can't prove it. They don't have a genealogical record of it. So here these folks are that have been known as Levites, but they don't have passports to prove it. Sons of Habiah, sons of Hakko, sons of Barzillai, who took a wife from the daughters of Barzillai the Gileadite, and he was called by their name. Verse 62. So all these guys between 59 and 61, these searched among their ancestral registration, but they could not be located. Therefore, guess what?
Excluded from the priesthood.
They can't serve in the temple. It's that important that they keep the law. You can't have someone that's not descended from Levi or Aaron within Levi doing temple service.
Wow.
That would be an abomination. And that's how they ended up in Babylon. They don't want this. The whole idea now is, let's not go through this again. Let's make sure we do the right thing. So these guys, they're known in their local community, hey, I'm a descendant of Aaron. Can't prove it. You're not getting near that temple. Now check this out. Verse 63. The governor, and the governor is likely Zerubbabel. He's the ruler, the Davidic descendant. He's leading these guys back. Verse 63. The governor said to them what? That they should not eat from the most holy things until a priest stood up with the Urim and Thummim. What do you think that means? Kind of weird.
Urim and Thummim? Or the other stuff?
Well, any of it. What does any of this mean?
Studied that. It was... there were articles, right?
Good. Okay, so let's... anyone know what the Urim and Thummim is? Okay, yeah, exactly right. They're described as part of the tabernacle service, and the high priest has it, and it's basically, this is what it is. I'm going to describe to you what it is in Marlon parlance, and I'll tell you what it is biblically. Anyone ever have as a kid the magic eight ball?
Yeah.
Should I ask Susie out?
No.
Try again. Believe it or not, the Bible has something similar. It's called the Urim and Thummim. If you read Exodus, it's what it's believed to be is a plate of stones that when the priests asked Yahweh, the God of Israel, for direction, he would use the Urim and Thummim to give them their reply.
You're kidding.
Except God, right? That this is authorized by the Bible as being from God.
Wow.
And so, now what are they going to ask this magic? I shouldn't call it that. What are they going to call this? What are they going to, if they can figure, if they can get the Urim and Thummim reinstituted, what are they going to do with it once they get it back working?
You just determine the answer to the question.
Yeah. Which question?
The
priest. Yes, that's exactly right. The governor says, let's not make these guys feel like complete rats. You know, if they're not Levites, Yahweh will tell us. So let's get a priest that we know is of Levitical priesthood to consult once we get the temple back up and running and all its accoutrements, the Urim and Thummim being one of them. We're going to find out, we'll consult the Urim and Thummim, find out whether these guys can serve or not. That way we won't be breaking the law of Moses. Yahweh won't lie to us. It's exactly what's going on here in this verse. Okay? Okay.
There's a lot of peace in just having an answer.
Yeah, that's
it.
Yeah.
From a practical standpoint,
you can at least make a decision. It's kind of like us. You know, when you ask for, or let me speak it this way. When I ask the Lord for direction, he has never yet appeared to me in my bedroom and said, Christopher, take the left road, not the right road. It is typically, you know, after Bible study, Jeff Gibson saying, hey, you know, I was just thinking about this and X and about a left road. And Jeff might not even know what I've been asking the Lord about, but it's the Lord telling me something. Or my wife saying, get off your ass and go to the left road. Oh, the Lord tell. You know, it's usually stuff like that, people in our lives, circumstances where we don't hear from him.
It seems a random comment.
Yes, but we've been consulted. But it's sort of like the Urim and Thummim, is it? And I know, John, that when I go on the left road after that consulting and hearing, I have peace. I've heard from you, Lord.
Yeah. We never got an answer to that, though, did we? It never tells us.
And with these guys, yeah, what happens? Right. No, because, it's a good question, Joe. By the time when they wrote this, the governor just made a decision. Hey, when we get there and stuff gets up and running, we'll do this. But we're talking, it's going to be years before they get this going.
Well, in reality, that is pretty cool, knowing that these individuals couldn't keep their heritage. They don't want to. We don't want them to be outcast. We want them.
They're
going to
get
us.
What, you know? It's one of the most peaceful things in life, just to deal with life, isn't necessarily, this is in business too, this is how the investment world works, it's not necessarily good news or bad news.
Right.
The worst case scenario is no news.
Mm-hmm.
That's the people missing children.
Mm-hmm.
People missing children would love to find a dead body often.
Yep.
It's better to find a dead body than no answer, because there's closure. Same thing going on with these guys. I don't want to be in purgatory. I don't want to be in, yeah, you know. Then the and Zerubbabel saying, look, we're going to get you guys closure. Just hang in there.
Wow, that's cool.
Okay, let's finish chapter 2 here. Could someone read? There's no crazy names here, I don't think. Could someone read verses 64 through 70?
The whole company numbered 42,360. Besides, there are 7,337 male and female slaves. And they also had 200 male and female singers. They had 736 horses, 245 mules, 435 camels, and 6,720 donkeys. When they arrived at the house of the Lord in Jerusalem, some of the heads of the families gave freewill offerings towards the rebuilding of the house of God on its site. According to their ability, they gave to the treasury for this work 61,000 derricks of gold, 5,000 minas of silver, and 100 priestly garments. The priests, the Levites, the musicians, the gatekeepers, and the temple servants settled in their own towns, along with some of the other people, and the rest of the Israelites settled in their towns.
Okay, thank you, John. So here you go. The whole assembly, verse 64, 42,360, but you also got the male, female servants, basically the folks that are hauling stuff, the folks that they're paying, that are in their households. Another 7,000. So in total, you got just about 50,000 human beings leaving Babylon and going to Jerusalem. Again, it's not at all close to the whole folks in captivity, but it's a good number of them. And you have here, verse 68, when they arrived at the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem. Now, this could be confusing. Why would it be confusing for the Bible to tell us that they arrived at the house of the Lord in Jerusalem?
There is no
house of the Lord. So, what
this
the Bible
is the place?
Yeah. Did anyone ever see the mosque or the dome of the gold dome right now at the Temple Mount? Okay, yeah. So that's where they went. But there was no dome there. There was no mosque there. Okay. Right. They got there. It was just remember when we were up there? It was just flat surface.
There's a ram around here somewhere.
Yeah, they got up there, and so they got to the empty space. They knew where the temple needed to be, and they offered willingly for the house of God to restore it on its foundation. So now they're going to be getting the work of setting the foundation. And so this is what this tells us is back in Babylon, folks that didn't go gave a collection plate for them to take. Cyrus gave them a bunch of wealth. But then when they got there, the folks that actually went there, the 50,000 that went there, what do you think they took with them? Clients for everything they had. And so when they get there, they take some of their stuff.
Yeah.
And now they put it into the community pot to say, we're going to get this party started now. And check out verse 70. Now the priests and the Levites, some of the people and the singers, the gatekeepers, temple servants, they lived in their cities, and all Israel in their cities. So what happened is they got to the Temple Mount. They said, this is where the action is going to take place. Probably started planning, and then they all decided, you know, let's meet back here next month. Yeah. And everyone go home, start having kids, find your house, you know, start planting gardens. And these guys all went to their cities, Bethlehem. All of these little towns and villages around Jerusalem, around the Negev, north almost in the Jezreel Valley, and started to rebuild their lives and started to create the nucleus for a new nation.
Weren't there already people living in these places?
And guess what? The rest of Ezra, we're going to find about these folks. Yeah. It's a lot like now. Israel returning back to the land and all the political controversy that comes with. Wait, these are other people there when they get there too, you know. So same stuff. Nothing new under the sun. Okay, with that, we're going to close. I'm going to ask if Chris Wentworth would close us in prayer.